The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it is another Saturday in CCO land, and we're going to talk officially lawns and gardens this morning. As you've been hearing us, possibly Julie and I, talking the last couple of weeks, that a couple of folks that we've worked with are returning, have returned to the CCO studio. Kate Netwall, Master Gardener, is with us. Kate, good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
And the turf guru, we call him that. He's the turf grass management guy. You're our turf guy.
Turf guy, yeah. I can handle that.
Sam doesn't say that on your business card.
It does not, no.
But Sam Bauer is with us. So Sam knows his stuff when it comes to lawns, to turf. So maybe some folks are seeing their lawn for the first time with some of this melting going on. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Every winter we say it's, you know, just more of a funny winter, right? But we had an open late fall there.
That's true.
You know, November, December, and then January, February have been pretty snowy, actually. I think I was looking at some of the data there. We're about 8 inches of additional snowfall for February.
So, yeah, I believe it. So, but again, as our listeners certainly are welcome to ask, and you know yourself, Sam, I think we saw you were at the State Fair last time.
That was the last time that I saw you, Denny.
But we can talk lawns today and any other kind of gardening question with Kate. So we've got some good brain power here in the studio. Let me open up the phone lines. And text lines. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, now is your chance. And Sam and Kate, by the way, will be here again next week. Just a little heads up there. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. And we got a text, guys, that came in earlier. Is there a, quote, best type of manure for a vegetable garden or a type not to use for a vegetable garden? What do you think, Kate?
Well, I think if you think about farm animals in particular, horse, cow, even chicken manure, but the trick is that it's well aged. You don't want to use anything that's fresh or it would be, you know, too hot and would actually burn the garden.
So when she says aged, that's, you know, really the composting process. And for most manures, that might be anywhere from 4 to 6 months it might take to compost it.
Oh, it could take that long.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of typical. Sam, what can we start at least thinking about if we haven't actually physically seen our lawns yet? What can we start thinking about doing? Because I know we're going to get questioned about pre-emergent and
all this.
Who knows
what. Yeah. So, you know, early March here, we definitely can start thinking about lawn care, but it's way too early to really get anything out there and do anything, you know. But, you know, pre-emergent herbicide applications for crabgrass would usually be late April or early May, for example, in a normal spring. You know, it's hard to predict normal anymore, I suppose.
Isn't that true?
Pre-emergence for crabgrass are the big one, and usually you might have some fertilizer in with that as well. But, you know, I often have a tendency to tell people not to get out there too soon with the mowers and the you know, dethatchers.
You always say you guys, if the lawn is still kind of squishy.
If the lawn is really soft and the grass is dormant, I think quite often I see more people doing more harm than good with that type of equipment too early in the spring, you bet.
Now, Kate, you're a master gardener. How long have you been a master gardener?
I've been a master gardener for 11 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the time goes by really
Whatever
quickly.
Got you interested in that? You've always been interested in gardening.
You know, I've always been interested in it, and I work as a garden. I have a garden service that I've been doing for over 20 years, and joining the Master Gardener program was just kind of a way for me to give back to the community. The Master Gardener program is a program of trained volunteers, so we receive a lot of education from the university on various things from aphids to zoysia grass, I always say.
A to Z.
And A to Z, and then some. And so our job is to go out and extend that knowledge and share with the community.
Very good. And Sam, for those that aren't familiar with you, I haven't heard you for a while, you're with the University of Minnesota Extension, right?
Yeah.
And you get to travel all over to different golf courses and everything, don't you?
I do. Yeah, I probably spend 50% of my time on golf course,
wow.
whether it's consulting or research. And most of that is in the state here.
Oh, it is.
But we have a great outreach program led by the Minnesota Golf Course Superintendents Association. And so we split the state up into five different regions, and we traveled each one of the regions all winter long. And it's really a fun program.
You know, we always like to do every Saturday is to mention the University of Minnesota website, the extension website. What is that?
It's extension.umn.edu.
That's great just for winter, spring reading. I mean, it's a great resource.
Right.
Or whatever you would be looking for.
Yeah, on the garden tab there, we have everything from, we have a turf grass management page on there. You know, we have our yard and garden pages. And what I really like about the web page, especially related to this show here, is we have some tools on there that help solve problems. So what insect is this if they're dealing with insects, or what weed is this if you're dealing with a particular weed?
Yeah.
So a lot of neat information.
We'll mention that, as we always like to do from time to time. 651-989-9226. Let's go to Shelley. It's calling from Woodbury. Shelley, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, all. I have a turf question already. Mm-hmm. Just thinking about heading up to the cabin, and probably not soon, but just about maybe 90 miles north of here. But turf in sandy, pretty shady soil. We just have not had any luck. We've been there for years, and the soil, we seem to be able to grow grass but not hang on to it year to year. So, and just a lot of conflicting opinions about how to do that, and some say it just can't be done.
Yeah, it certainly can be done. So the sand is nice. We actually build like golf putting greens and athletic fields out of sand because it's really nice because it drains really well. But we just need to think a little bit differently about the grass species that you're using in that situation. So, I don't think Kentucky bluegrass or perennial ryegrass will be the best ones. In my mind, you really have two options, and that would be, you know, the category of fine fescues, which are really drought tolerant. They'll get a really nice deep root system in sandy soil. And then the benefit with the fine fescues, you don't have to mow them very often either. So that's really nice. A good shade tolerance with all of the fescues as well. The other option is tall fescue, which is a little bit more of just a little bit more wider texture, a little, you know, more coarse leaf blade. It grows about the same as Kentucky bluegrass, but in sand, it'll get really deep root system, and you'll have to mow it, you know, about the same as a standard lawn, but it's a really good drought tolerant, shade tolerant option. So I think there's some good potential there, and I would, you know, definitely think about fertilizing it once or twice per year, but, you know, with the right grass species in if it's not too heavy shade, I think practically you should be able to get something that'll survive.
So there. Without seeing it, you think it's doable then?
It sounds doable. I mean, there's some level of shade that really nothing will grow underneath, right? But sandy soil is a good thing in most cases. You'll want to get out the hose and the oscillating sprinklers or the portable sprinklers to germinate the grass seed for that first, you know, week or 2 weeks. But once it's up and going, it should be hands off, you know, depending on what Mother Nature's doing for us, I suppose.
Good luck with that, Shelley. Thanks for the call. Shelley leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. Talking lawns and gardens on CCO Smart Garden Show. By the way, brought to us every week by our friends at By the Yard Outdoor Furniture. We'll talk about that great CCO company in just a moment. But Texter says this, Kate, when should I start my tomato seeds for planting? When do you think?
Oh, well, tomato seeds have a long season, so I would think that would be a good time to start them now. And in fact, there's lots of seed catalogs out there, and I was just peeking at the website, the umn.edu.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a great publication on there on decoding seed catalogs. Because the seed catalogs have a lot of information about how a plant grows and might give you some good tips on choosing the right varieties.
Wow, great idea. Good. There's folks are getting anxious to work in their lawns, I can tell.
The techs are flying in here.
Can I fertilize now over the snow so when it melts it'll go into the grass? Now there's somebody who wants to get outside.
I'm not even going to say no to that. I'm going to say absolutely not. You do, definitely don't want to fertilize on snow, and I would even wait, you know, quite a bit longer than that. So, you know, just in regards to lawn fertilization, you want to be sure your grass is growing so that it has the ability to take up the nutrients. Otherwise, environmentally, the loss could be quite great from the fertilizer there. I'm most concerned with the nitrogen. We usually use phosphorus-free fertilizers, but in some case there might be phosphorus in there. But nitrogen applications when the grass is really not growing would be a bad thing.
Okay. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. I want to mention there's a line open if you have a lawn or garden question. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. In the Twin Cities, 36 degrees now. We might hit 50 later today. If you think it's expensive to buy outdoor furniture, wait until you have to buy it more than once. I want to talk about that CCO Land company called Buy the Yard. This is the furniture, you buy it once. You just keep adding to it. It's got a 35-year guarantee. And again, it's a CCO Land family-run business, best warranty in the business. It's guaranteed not to crack, to splinter, or peel for 35 years. And if you've got a patio, a deck, maybe a fire pit, or a lake home, let's face it, you need some good outdoor furniture. And with over 50 tables, they've got 8 different dining chair styles, 9 classic colors. I'm going to give you phone numbers toll-free. You can visit their showroom, a quick drive down 169 in Jordan, Minnesota. Very, very fast drive. They'll help you decide which style works best in your place. A lot of great ideas there. You can get on the web, if you like, buytheyard.net, but call this toll-free number. Get that new color catalog, 877-220-0448. That's 877-220-0448. Patio furniture from By the Yard. Good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long here with Master Gardener Kate Netwall and the turf expert Sam Bauer has returned. They both have returned to our studio helping us out, helping you out by phone and by text. Let me give you a number. There is one line open, 651-989-9226, or the text is 81807. You guys see we have a lot of text messages we can get to, but Sandy is calling from Apple Valley, I believe, with a question. How can we help you, Sandy?
Good morning. I've got a couple of really tall blue spruce trees, and I was wondering when I could trim the lower branches that are growing in the neighbor's yards.
So are you interested in pruning them because they're outside of the bounds of your yard?
Yes.
Okay. So the best time, actually, to prune them, you can just cut them back to what your boundaries are, but you have to be concerned about the overall shape of the tree because you don't want to just trim it on one side and, you know, give it a good shape. But now would be a good time to actually go out there.
So now would be.
Yeah.
All right, there you go, Sandy. Let's see, 651-989-9226. Texter says, is there a type of bug killer that I can spray around the outside of the house that'll keep bugs out of my house and not hurt the lawn?
Yeah, none of the insecticides would hurt the lawn at all. So I would just go to, you know, even any of your standard big box stores and get some of those insect killers. Permethrin would probably be a big one there. I suppose Carbaryl might be another big one. But no concerns with any of the insecticides to
hurt the grass.
To hurt your grass at all, right? And you can spray a perimeter around your house and it should do a pretty good job. You might want to repeat that monthly or so.
Probably.
Yep.
Texter says White Bear Lake and surrounding areas are experiencing a water shortage and possible watering ban. What's the best way, Texter says, to have a healthy lawn but conserve water and use as little water on the lawn as possible?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic, actually, the whole water use on lawns. If anybody's ever heard me on the radio show here before, it's a really passionate topic of mine. So we have a lot of great resources on our website. The one that Kate gave out, the Extension website, has some great stuff there. But the other one I'm going to direct listeners to is our Turfgrass Science website. So it's turf.umn.edu. And there's a great video, a little 6-minute video on there that we produced in collaboration with the Metropolitan Council. And it talks about smart irrigation controllers. It talks about the drought tolerant grasses, talks about adjusting your sprinklers so they're not watering impervious surfaces, for example. It talks about raising your mowing height is another really good practical option for trying to reduce water use in lawns. So I think if you can find that video on our the first page of our website there, turf.umn.edu, there'd be some great tips in there for you.
Okay, good. Texter says, going to prune apple trees today. Is there a mixture to apply to prune the tool to prevent transfer of potential disease from branch to branch or tree to tree. So how do you use some antiseptic for the tools you use?
Right. So you're talking about cleaning the tools between the different cuts so that you're not spreading disease.
Yeah.
And the recommendation is a 10-to-1 solution of bleach for that to keep your tools clean. And that's something that you can use on, and can and should use on all of your pruning tools on a regular basis to keep them free of disease.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones. Lois in New Hope has been waiting. Lois, we're listening. How can we help you?
I have a question, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it right. It's ranunculus. I'm thinking it's a tropical plant, but I have seen seeds for it, and I'm just wondering if I could start the seeds at home. And then when they're ready to plant, and I have a upper tier on my garden, and it gets the sun all day, I wonder if I possibly could do it that way, because they are just beautiful. They are so colorful.
Yeah, that's a great plant, that ranunculus. And I think it's actually got like a little bulb or a corm rather than a seed that you plant. And you could certainly start them indoors now and transfer them outside. And you said your garden has an upper tier to it. So it may or may not be something that will come back year to year, because if it's in an upper tier, that ground might actually freeze more so than if it were deeper in the ground. But they're a beautiful plant and come in lots of colors, so have fun with that.
We always, as you guys know, have fun with the term Creeping Charlie, because we should maybe award a prize to somebody who brings it up on every show, first brings it up. But a texter sent this in a bit ago. Why don't golf courses get Creeping Charlie? What are they doing?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, one of the biggest reasons that Creeping Charlie invades home lawns is because, you know, it could be an environment thing or the wrong grass species for the wrong place, for example. But quite simply, the reason Creeping Charlie is such an issue because it's an opportunist. So when the grass is not very healthy, then Creeping Charlie, especially in shade and heavy, you know, wet environments, Creeping Charlie will kind of take over. From a golf course standpoint, I think, you know, they do a lot of really good maintenance practices, aerating and proper fertilizing and proper watering and things like that. And in turn, their grass is very, very healthy. So there's not much of an opportunity for Creeping Charlie to come in and take over. But yeah, interesting question there.
There was a follow-up, as you can see, Sam and Kate. Do we know where that term came from, Creeping Charlie? I don't think we've ever had that question before.
It looks like they're looking for somebody to blame. I'm not sure. Actually, the more accurate term for Creeping Charlie would be ground ivy. A couple different names there. But ground
did people ivies. Years ago used to plant it?
I've heard stories of people who got it from a garden center once upon a time and planted it. And you know, it's a plant that has a purpose. If there's an area you don't want to mow and it's in the deep shade, it's a low ground cover that requires no maintenance.
It'll help you out in that department.
I'm not quite there yet, Kate, but yeah. We'll get there maybe. Okay.
Well, I tell you, it's good food for the bees early on, and it smells great.
Sure. Right. Yeah, it's a little mint smell. It's a member of the mint family.
That's right. Guys, we have to take a quick break. We have another half hour of the show to go, so hang in there. 651-989-9226. We'll get back to the phones. Text number is 81807. It's a Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long here. Kate Netwall, Master Gardener, is with us in studio along with our turf expert and the former Sam Bauer. So we have a true lawn and garden folks here to answer those questions. And as you can see, guys, we have a lot of both phones and text message. This portion, every week, our good friends down near Jordan, Minnesota, that make the best furniture in the world, outdoor furniture, by the yard. They sponsor this show. We thank them for that. By the yard. What is, where's the maple tree question? Is it too late to prune my maple tree? What do you guys think of that?
Well, right now the sap is flowing in the maple trees. And so it's a good time to do tapping of maple, birch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, even box elder trees. You can do the tapping there. There also are not a lot of disease and bug vectors happening right now. So certainly if the limbs that you need to are in harm's way or somebody could be injured by them, then definitely take them down. But you're just going to have a lot of extra sap.
Okay. Making me hungry for some pancakes or something.
Yeah.
Becky is calling from Coon Rapids. Becky, you're on CCO. Thank you.
Yes, good morning. While biking last fall, I noticed a lot of vines along chaining fences that border highways and roads. And this vine would have a small round pod, prickly pod. And when I opened it up, it had black seeds like watermelon seeds. And I'm wondering if you know what this vine is and if I might be able to plant those seeds here.
Oh, it doesn't ring a bell to me, Becky. I don't know if Kate...
Yeah, where did you say you saw it?
I see it often on chain link fences growing wild and areas alongside of highways.
Yeah.
Julie's probably listening in and going, this is what it is.
Right. I'm trying to think of some of the things I see wildly growing, like a woodbine or a grape leaf, but I don't recognize the fruit pod that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's kind of a distinguishing thing to have this little green pod, and then it turns brown, and then inside of it, it's real prickly, and then inside of it has the black seeds.
Right, but if it's growing wildly, then there's a good chance that it might grow in your, you might be able to propagate it. But again, if it's growing wildly, you might want to make a note to, if you do plant it and have success with it, then you might have a containment issue.
Right, exactly, yeah. Okay. But most likely there would be some information on our extension website.
Give us that website again.
It's extension.umn.edu, and there's a garden tab there, and just a lot of great information on there. If you're really getting stumped, you can certainly reach out to Master Gardener or to one of us educators.
Could Becky send a picture, a digital picture?
Oh, absolutely.
That would be great, yeah.
Ask a Master Gardener. There's a link right on our website there.
Right, a picture of the fruit and the leaf, as much information as you can provide.
There you go, Becky. We'll mention again that website as we move through the rest of the show. Pete is calling from Roseville, I believe. Go ahead, Pete.
Hi there, folks. I have a real cute story about Creeping Charlie. It seems that my Grandma Jo, she fought Creeping Charlie all her life and just hated it. And after she passed, we were going to go visit her grave at the cemetery. But before we went, I was intrigued by this, what I thought was this beautiful little purple flower. And so I picked a bunch. And then when we got to the cemetery, I laid it on her grave. And my mom...
I can see where this coming.
Is going. Yeah.
My mom just smiled. She didn't say anything. She just smiled and thought to herself, poor Joe, she couldn't get rid of it in life, and she can't get rid of it in death.
Oh, Pete, that's a classic. Great story, Pete. That is a great story. Thanks for taking the time. 651-989-9226. What is, a texter says, a good method of removing lilac bushes this spring? Somebody wants to get rid of the lilacs.
Well, it depends on how long they've been there, but if you really want to get rid of them, I'd recommend cutting them down to, about a foot or so off the ground, and then some big heavy digging. Some people, depending on how old they are, you might need something mechanical, a backhoe or a little bobcat to help pull them out.
Would the timing be after they bloom in the spring here to do that, or...?
Well, I'm not sure what the questioner's intention is. Mm-hmm. If she wants to get rid of them, it doesn't matter. Otherwise, sure, why not wait until after they bloom and then, enjoy that last blossom of them.
Sure.
Sam at Texture says, moss is taking over my yard. Help.
Yeah. Moss, doesn't directly compete with grass. The reason it is there is because the grass is not healthy. So we need to think about why the grass isn't healthy. And in the case with moss, it's usually shade is one thing that comes into play, excessive moisture on the surface, and then certainly soil compaction as well. So I would choose some shade-tolerant grass species like the fescues. I would probably aerate the lawn to try to, reduce the moisture on the surface there. And then the nice thing about moss is it's not even barely rooted in the soil there. So I usually wouldn't apply a product to get rid of it. You can take a hard tooth rake or whatever, and it'll come up and then seed right into that. But you want to improve the site conditions before you go, down this whole process. Otherwise, the moss would just come back in and take over. So aerating, pruning, reducing compaction and moisture on the surface there.
Here's a text that says, love the show, but please explain the purpose of nitrogen and phosphorus. What do those help do for the lawn?
So three main numbers on a fertilizer bag that, you know, we would usually look at. Nitrogen's the first one, phosphorus is the middle one, and then potassium is the last one there. So the nitrogen and phosphorus, I mean, they're building blocks of the plant, right? So they're essential essential mineral nutrients that all plants need to grow. We have a phosphorus law in Minnesota that's, you know, for lawns that states you can't put phosphorus on your lawn unless you have a soil test indicating a need for it or unless you're establishing a new lawn. But, it, you know, phosphorus is still important for your lawn. The law is just acknowledging that most of our soils are sufficient in phosphorus. They are not sufficient in nitrogen, which is why we have to apply nitrogen on an annual basis to nitrogen is the nutrient that causes your grass to really grow and green up.
All right. Dan is just telling us that we've been having multiple calls suggesting that vine, the previous call, might be wild cucumber.
Ah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does, especially when you think of the fruit.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for the call. We have smart listeners.
We do.
Yes,
absolutely.
Thank you for that.
We do. Let's see. Creeping Charlie again. Our neighbor is very concerned about our weeds getting in her yard and then seeding after Creeping Charlie removal. I guess they want to know the process, right, of removing the Creeping Charlie and then seeding?
Best time to get rid of Creeping Charlie would be in the fall of the year. You know, I usually like to look at it. If there isn't much grass to preserve in this situation, then I would probably just start over. And in that case, I mean, we're using a non-selective herbicide probably that would kill all the grass and the Creeping Charlie. I think your efforts will be much less if you go down that route. Usually the cutoff would be 50 or 60% Creeping Charlie. I would say, okay, let's start over. But fall of the year is the best time for that, you know, Labor Day or, you know, even later into the fall is just fine. And then, choose a good seed source and go ahead and try to grow that in and hopefully it would keep the Creeping Charlie at bay.
Before we go back to the phones, speaking of grass seed, we had an earlier text that was talking about the shade. Is there a type of seed that you – I know you do recommend certain types of seeds.
Yeah. So there are, you know, what I would call two categories of options. So if it's heavy shade and it's average to below average moisture, I would use one of the fescues, and that includes fine fescue or tall fescue. If it's, you know, really heavy shade and it's wet conditions, then we're looking at some specific bluegrasses actually, which is like rough bluegrass. You'll see the Latin name on a seed label, Poa trivialis, actually. And then Supina bluegrass is another one. I don't like to use those bluegrasses unless we really have a wet, heavy shade situation that dictates it. I think fescues will accomplish your goals in most cases.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Gene in Stillwater has been waiting. Gene, we're all listening here.
Yes, I want to transplant some violets, and I want to know what kind of soil to use. I have some vermiculite and perlite, but it's very, very old. And I also have trouble after I transplant, they die on me.
Are we talking woodland violets?
No, just violets in the house, potted ones.
So like an African violet.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to want to, if your vermiculite and your other materials are rather old, you might want to invest in some fresh potting soil.
Okay.
And then plant them in that.
There you go. Thank you, Gene. Hope that helped. Yes. Julie is listening to the show wherever she is. Wild cucumber vine, native but big cedar. We're getting very aggressive, she said. How about that?
Okay. Yeah.
Doesn't that come from Julie? Isn't that what that says?
That is Julie. You bet. Yep. So,
all right.
Thanks for listening, Julie.
It's amazing because we have a lot of listeners, as you guys know and Julie knows, online. They could be listening to us virtually anywhere at the time.
Right.
651-989-9226. We have to take a quick break, guys. Don't go away. We'll be picking up more on your phone calls. Again, 651-989-9226. Text number is 81807. We'll have more Smart Garden Show here coming up on CCO. 36 degrees right now. And welcome back to CCO Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here with Kate Netwall, Master Gardener, and our turf expert, Sam Bauer. And they have agreed they're going to be here next week as well, right?
This is fun, Denny. We're getting
like
the
this.
Hang of this,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Took a little. There's a little learning curve, I suppose.
So truly, if you have any kind of a lawn question, any kind of a gardening question, this is your chance today and next week. Not that it always is, but we have some extra help here in the studio. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Sam, a text came in a bit ago. It says, in the fall, they put a straw blanket over new seeded dirt. Should we remove it?
In most cases, I would leave that. The only time where I like to remove some of the blanket is if it has like the plastic netting with it, then usually I would remove that, you know, just shortly after the grass germinates. But most of your straw blankets, they're going to be biodegradable, and I would leave it there.
All right, we had a question, I guess a chemical question before, if I can find it. It's about Japanese beetles, and it's about a certain chemical. You see that?
Yeah.
Some Grub X, because I was inundated, Texter says, with Japanese beetles last year. Will this product harm my pollinator garden?
That's a great question. So the question is on Scott's Grub X product, which you can buy at most of your big box stores or your garden centers, and actually – the concern with the pollinators previously related to insecticides has been this category of neonics or the neonicotinoid type of insecticides, of which imidacloprid is one of the bigger ones that we use in the turf industry. Now, with that Scott's Grub X, they actually have changed the active ingredient. So it's no longer imidacloprid. It's chlorantraniliprole, which is the trade name in professional turf industry is acelaprin, but it's a very safe, practically non-toxic active ingredient for pollinators. So I think the Scott's Grub X is a good option. I would put that down in the May-June timing as a preventative for Japanese beetle grubs.
Okay. Let's see. I collect, Texter says, my grass clippings almost always. Do I need to rake or dethatch every spring? I hate raking.
Well, first of all, I would say don't collect your grass clippings, right? I mean, grass clippings are 85% water and the rest is mostly mineral nutrients, right? So nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. They're about 3.5% nitrogen, actually. So they break down really quickly. They do not contribute to a thatch layer in lawns at all. So I like to return them to the lawn, and we usually give you a one fertilizer application per year credit if you don't remove the clippings. When you constantly remove them, then you're just mining the nutrients from the soil. So I like to leave them where they're at. I rarely see actual thatch issues in lawns. I think the dethatching concept in the spring is overemphasized.
Interesting. But I do like the idea of aeration, though.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of aeration, especially in the fall.
All right. Texter says, we get red thread every year. How can we get rid of it? Kill grass and start over? Seems to be the fescue grass. What's that?
That's a good question. Yeah. So red thread is actually a fungus that, you know, spring and fall, we might see it sometimes in the cooler times of year. But I would not recommend to spray a fungicide for a home lawn to control red thread. Usually I feel that it's a nutrient issue. So it's particularly a low nitrogen disease. So, you know, just be sure that you're on a decent nitrogen program with two or three applications of fertilizer per year. And you might want to do a soil test, I think, as well. Grass species could come into play here. There are some that are more resistant to red thread than others. So, we could certainly have that conversation at some point. But, it's a very common disease, and usually we consider it a low nutrient disease.
Who would want, and of course this is a little early now, to get a soil test? I know the university does that, but when is it, and why would you have a soil test?
Well, you want to have a soil test done so you understand what that medium is in your yard and or your garden, and it will give you some indications as to what you have as well as what you might need to add to your soil. Mm-hmm. If you're going to grow blueberries, are you growing carrots, are you growing turf, are you growing apple trees? So all those different kinds of crops or plants need different things, and the soil test will indicate to you what you might need to do to improve your soil for those plants.
Our testing laboratory is actually right on the St. Paul campus. The regular soil tests are just $17. And they give you quite a lot of great descriptive information. You can take the soil test at any time of the year as long as the soil isn't frozen. So just keep in mind, they really get quite a few samples in the spring of the year. So try to get them in, as soon as you can.
Yeah, very good. And before you guys leave, we'll give the website again, too, for that that particular great resource. Karen is calling from Edina, meanwhile. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have an African violet that is at least 25 years old. And it is absolutely, or was absolutely gorgeous, blooming every year. The leaves are nice and firm and green, and I've transplanted it, a good 6-8 times. Right now it's in a pot that does not have drainage that is about 10 to 12 inches across. And I think about 2.5 weeks ago, I overwatered it, which I'm very careful not to do, but I wasn't. And ever since then, the leaves have been looking not happy. It does have one new bloom on it. And I wonder, I've just not been watering it, hoping it'll dry out and putting it in the sun. Do you have any other suggestions?
Yeah, well, first of all, a 25-year-old African violet, good for you. But regarding your current situation with it, I would empty the pot. I would take it out of its pot, because even if it's in the sun, where the moisture is at the bottom of that pot, and that's where you're at risk of root rot for that plant. And so even if you have it in a really nice decorative pot, maybe you want to put it in a plastic pot that has holes in the bottom so you've got good drainage. And then when it's time to water, you can actually lift it out of that pot and put it in a dish of water and water it up from the bottom and then replace it back into that decorative pot. But particularly with African violets and one that you've had for so long, you don't want to mess around with that. So make sure it's got good drainage.
Very good. We have a couple of minutes to go. Let's see if we can help some more folks out text-wise. All right, this is a question, Sam, as you know, we get from time to time. How do I get rid of a lumpy lawn?
Oh, that is a really good question. And if you do have a lumpy lawn, I certainly feel for you. It's a tough one. So I will say that 90% of the bumpy lawn issues that I deal with are related to earthworms or night crawlers. And when you step on a bump and you feel like you're going to twist your ankle, you know, if you look down and at what actually that lump is, most of the time it would be earthworm castings. So, you know, there aren't any – earthworms are usually a sign of healthy soil, so there aren't any products that I would usually recommend for that. But you can rent one of those power rakes and set it a little bit deeper in the soil, and I would do it in the fall. But what you're trying to do is level off kind of all of those earthworm castings, and then it's going to damage your grass quite a bit, so I would go ahead and overseed into that. But if the lumps are quite large, in a lot of cases, there's really not much you can do without, you know, regrading the landscape there. But I look to earthworms first. They're usually a sign of a good, healthy soil. And then, you know, some people have tried rollers to try to level out the mounds. That might work, but I like the power rake option better.
We've got a minute to go, and there's a question. I know we've had questions about problems with black walnut trees as far as growing around that. Why is that an issue with the black walnut?
Yeah, the black walnuts have this compound that the roots would put out. It's called allelopathy. It's juglone, I believe, is the
That's
compound
right.
that comes out from those. And the question here is there any grass seed that will grow better around them? It's a good question. In general, the black walnuts might deter, you know, most plants in a lot of cases, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But one shot maybe would be try tall fescue, I suppose, in that situation.
Right. Our website, extension.umn.edu, has some recommendations on plants that you can put under the black walnut trees. So
good.
You can look that up there.
More next week when you guys return. Thanks very much. Good to see you here on CCO. 36 degrees. Stay tuned.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.